A word additionally about me, I am a church revitalizing pastor. That has been my opportunity. I spent the first 20 years of ministry in youth pastor or assistant pastor roles. And then what's now 22 and a half years ago or thereabouts, my wife and I left a role in a larger established church to go to a struggling, smaller church that was ingrown, I would say. All the arrows pointed inside. And it was either change or die. It really was. So we came to that church. Size, the numbers are less important than the way the church was focused. When we came, we were told, we have this salary for you. It's guaranteed for the next 90 days. Then we're out of money. So we're either going to grow this thing or we're not. So Merry Christmas and welcome on board. Well, we've been there now 22 years. We begin year 23. But the church revitalization process that we've gone through there, we are now spinning again, a new cycle. Because in the last year, David, I don't know that I've had a chance to tell you this. Maybe I have. In the last year, two other churches in town have come to us in need of church revitalization. So a year ago, June, a church of about 20 whose pastor had retired and left, and they had discussed closing, didn't see a path forward, didn't see finances to hire a pastor and the leadership to make it. So they connected with us and said, could you help us? Could you help us? Then 3 months later, in September of last year, we began working with another church. Almost identical story. 20 people, pastor had retired and left, and they had his initial conversation. They had one elder left. His initial conversation with me was, I really don't know you, but if we sold everything we have, could we give it all to your church and just close our doors? And I said, wow, that's quite an offer. Before you do that, could we maybe talk about church revitalization? Could we talk about helping? Could we talk about working together to see if growth could take place again? So this last year, we have been leading our own church and two others, meeting together with our staff and various leaders. We are now at a place in our growth where I have other staff people. So I have our staff people preaching at these others every Sunday morning. We are preaching the same sermon in three different locations. One church up north, then we're kind of in the middle, and another church 15 minutes south. And later we can talk about how that's working for you. But we're a year in on the one church and 9 months in on the other. But it's this. It's church revitalization. It's what do we need? How do we move forward? So interesting, some of the things that we talked about 22 years ago in our church and saw some results from that, we've been able to say, let's think like this. Much of it begins with how we think and what we love. So my privilege today to talk to you about the social dimension, relationships within the church with unbelievers. It's difficult to revitalize a church with an unrevitalized heart. Isn't that true? So part of what I want to think with you about is this, getting to the heart of the matter. Anybody recognize this? It's here in Europe. This is Slovenia. What, Lake Blade? Yes? Maybe you've been there. Yes. Some years ago, we were there visiting some missionary friends, and I loved the idea of a heart with a beautiful background. But thinking about the heart of the matter, and you can look at your notes here, I want to go here first. This business of relationships, I say, within the church and with unbelievers, it's always a matter of the heart. And we're going to be thinking about relationships within the church and outside the church. I want to go to both of those. And I want to suggest to you today that relationships, what we might call the social aspect, relational ministry, relationships are the currency both to grow a church on the inside and to reach out. It's relationships. Relationships inside, relationships outside. Now, I mentioned the church that we came to serve 22 and some years ago. All of the focus was, if I were to draw a circle and arrows, all the arrows were going in. That is, the energy of the church was all going inside. We had potlucks, wonderful, I mean, reasonably decent potlucks. You know, potlucks are always a mixed bag. Anyway, I'll leave it alone. Potlucks, activities, Bible studies. Oh, I'm sorry. A potluck is a dinner where everybody brings something different. Do you do something like this? What do you call it when you do it?
Swedish table.
Okay, agape. Okay, agape meal. So the way it's sometimes done in American churches, I'm sorry, I thought that was a little more universal. Bad on me. I learned something just now. It would be a meal where I'd say, okay, if your last name begins with A through L, bring a salad or a dessert. And if your last name would be M through the end of the alphabet, please bring a main dish. And we're going to put it all on a table and let's eat. That would be a potluck. Okay, agape feast. You can understand why that might go really well and it might go poorly, depending on who brought what, how much there is. It's a kind of a joke in our family. Some people love meals like that. Others of us have been to enough of them where we love them less. Okay, it's the reality. But I'm simply saying, as our little church functioned, as we came to it there in 2001, all the arrows were going in. The energy was on inside. People would say, well, fellowship, we're good at fellowship and edification, building up the body. But I would suggest there really were no arrows going out. Energy going to the community. And that was one of my early observations of this really stagnant church, is all of our energy is here. Do we know the person across the street? I don't think so. Do we know the leaders in our town? I don't think so. Do we know their names? Do we pray for them? No. Are we doing anything to connect? Now, some churches, I would say, have a lot of arrows going out and maybe not warm-hearted relationships inside. So as we're thinking together and as you're thinking together here about a healthy church, as Dave helps us define that, boy, it takes arrows going in, energy inside to build up and edify. Certainly that fellowship is wonderful, but it also takes energy, and I'm saying arrows for my illustration, going out to the community. It takes both of those for us to be a healthy church. So relationships, I'm saying, are the currency. Relationships inside the church and relationships outside the church. So I want to think with you about both of those, okay? Relationships inside, relationships outside. Under this category of being proactive, meaning you take responsibility for some things, okay? You do this. You do these things as leaders. These are emphases that we've done in our own church and in these other two churches that we have stepped alongside this last year. This is where we have started with them, is thinking about some things like relationships in the church, always a hard issue. Yes, in your preaching and teaching, call God's people to love lost people. This is a heart issue. That's my first big push here today. This is a heart issue. Who do you love? What do you love? I would suggest in the church that we came to 21 years ago, 22 whatever years ago, there was a lot of love inside, but as I said very directly to us then, I'm not sure we love those outside. And I asked us to think about that. I asked us to think, if we were missionaries sent by a mission organization to reach this community, and they came to us and said, do you love your mission field? I think we would have to say no. Because there's no evidence of it. So we did some exercises together. I asked them that very specifically. If we were a mission team sent from another country to this community, What would we write home on our mission letter? What did you do? Did you meet any natives? Do you love the natives? Or are you mainly irritated by them? They drive too fast. They're loud and obnoxious. They're not very friendly. Do you love the natives? These are things for us to think about. I preached a number of sermons in those early months, years, about calling God's people to love lost people. And I went to places in the New Testament where Jesus reached the multitudes. Mark 6, even at the place where he's exhausted and tired, and he's leaving to get away with his disciples, heading to the other side of the lake, the Sea of Galilee, and the people see where he's going and run there ahead of him. He gets to the other side, hoping to have a retreat. And there's everybody. It's like, and he had compassion for them. There was love. There was love for the lost people. And I remember, actually one of our guys met me in the parking lot, true story, after church one time. And he said to me, "Are you going to ever quit talking about loving lost people? That seems like that's what you keep talking about." And I said, "Well, good. That means you're paying attention. But maybe I'll preach on it less when we start to do it." He ended up leaving the church, which was fine, ultimately. I always hate it when people leave the church. But his vision for a church was one with all the arrows pointing in. And once we begin to talk about arrows going out and loving lost people, this is an American example, because I don't know what would be shocking in yours. But 20 some years ago in that little ingrown church, I'm confident we had nobody who didn't have their natural hair color. Okay, they might have dyed their hair, but it wasn't like red or green or blue or purple, okay? And I remember asking, this was the most audacious, bold example I could come up with. What would happen if someone walked in here with blue hair? Would you go sit by them? Would you talk to them or invite them to your house? That was pretty radical. It's not radical anymore. There's a lot of people with blue hair and red hair and orange hair, and some who come to our church now, and it's just not a thing. But it would have been 20 some years ago. Like, oh my goodness, a true pagan. They have blue hair. What must be done about this? But I was asking the question, do we love lost people? And if so, is it a love that is more than a feeling? How is it evidenced? What does that look like? So I asked this question, and I said over and over again, if you don't love lost people, no matter how much you think you're like Jesus, you're not like Jesus. That was very disturbing to a number of folks who kind of prided themselves on all of the fruit of the Spirit as they defined it. Love, joy, peace, and so on. I have all those. I must be a mature Christian. I'm like Jesus. And I begin to say, you know, if you don't love lost people, you're not nearly as much like Jesus as you think. Wow. So there was some disturbing going on in the church. It was good disturbing, I think. I've given you some examples here. Well, in this same category, I begin to define something. You know, we live in a world where the term diversity is sometimes talked about a lot, meaning something different. And I begin to talk about something called that I would call biblical diversity. I wanted to reclaim the word. And I begin to talk about this in our church. I remember using an illustration where I drew a little dot on a whiteboard or something like that, a little tiny dot, like a pencil dot. And I said, right now, this is the group we want to reach in our community. It's that big. In other words, we want to reach people just like us. So as people move in, we're saying, are you like us? To use a bigger word, homogeneous. They're just like us. And I said, I believe in order for us to fulfill God's call in our community, we need to make that dot a little bigger. See? Biblical diversity. Somebody with blue hair, green hair, maybe someone who has something pierced that you don't think should be pierced. How about that? Can they come to our church? Maybe somebody who has, oh my goodness, some real life sin in their life, and they're longing to get free from it. Maybe they could come to our church. This was put to the test one Sunday when in came a couple, brand new, didn't know them. They sat in the front row. They had a Ryrie study Bible. I never met them. And I remember I was preaching from the book of Romans. And I said, as I normally do when I begin to preach, would you take your Bibles, please? Turn with me, I said, to the book of Romans. And I noticed them go to the very front of the Bible, to the index, and go, and I realized, oh boy, they have no clue where the book of Romans is. So I stalled. Finally, they found the book of Romans, got the page number, and finally got to the book of Romans. I thought, wonderful. This is outstanding. And so I preached that day from the book of Romans. Well, as it turned out, this was a couple who was living together, not married. So what do you do with that? Well, they didn't come every Sunday. We were just getting to know them. They popped in every 2 or 3 weeks. And I remember the same gentleman who met me in the parking lot, he hadn't left yet. He came to me and said, did you know that they are living together and not married? When are you going to address that with them?
Okay.
The Ryrie Study Bible does address it, doesn't it? And I said, well, you know, they haven't been here hardly just a few months. I don't think that's their biggest problem. I think their biggest problem is they don't know Jesus. So I think if we could work together to help them come to know Jesus, that would be better if I went and smacked them about them living together outside of marriage. Wow, that was very disturbing to a person who wants you to smack people about their sin. The short story of that was within about, oh goodness sake, 6 months, one of them filled out a comment card saying, I'd like to be baptized. And I said, wonderful, let's meet. And so they came to my office one morning. And I said, man, tell me your story. I'd like to hear from you. So they told me their story. One of them said, well, you know, I was raised kind of doing church. And the other said, yeah, really not. And so we talked about the gospel and what that meant to them and defined what it meant to know Jesus. And the one saying, yeah, you know, I kind of, you know, that used to be my life and I kind of walked away. We talked about that a little bit. To the other one, I said, did you understand what we talked about here? This was the guy, Wade. And he said, you know, I think I do understand it. And I said, is there anything today that would keep you from trusting Christ as your Savior from sin? Like right now. And he kind of looked at his girlfriend and said, no, I don't think there is. And I said, then how about if we do that right now? If you talk to God and you tell him that you want to be part of his family, talk to him through a simple prayer. And he said, well, okay. And he bowed his head and he prayed a wonderful prayer and said, wow, so that's how it works, huh? And I said, it does. Now, there's another verse I'd like you to read. So I opened my Bible to Hebrews 13, verse 4, which says, let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled, for fornicators and adulterers God will judge. And I handed him the Bible and I said, would you read that verse out loud? Let the word of God speak. And he read it out loud, and he stared at it, and he looked at Deborah and said, we shouldn't be living together. And it was like a moment of shock. Like, oh my goodness. So he looked at me and said, well, if I'm going to get another place, it's going to take me a week or two. Is that okay? I said, yes, that's actually okay. And in the couple of weeks that followed, they did some other talking, and he said, you know what? Instead of us just moving away, I need to really move back home to my family. Get some things right in my life. My parents know some things about this too, and they would love to help me. So he left and moved out, went back to wherever he came from. She stayed in our church. She's still in our church. She's now married to a man who knows Jesus. And wow, I look back at that, though, as an example of making sure we get the gospel first, that relationships are more important, a love for lost people that isn't just about smacking them. It's loving and letting the gospel go forward on the back of relationships, okay? So thinking together about this. So I'm saying being proactive, calling people, God's people, to biblical diversity, where the Bible gives room for differences. Oh, goodness sakes, color of your hair, what you pierce, I'm not sure those things are addressed in the Bible. In our little church, we needed to address things like school choice, because there were some who really believed that all good Christians homeschooled their children or Christian schooled their children. There were others who still saw value in public school. So we had to talk about letting that be a secondary issue. That's not the main test of whether you know, love Jesus or not. In our American church, we had to talk about use of alcohol, because in our little church, nobody officially ever drank alcohol. Oh, here and there I saw some bottles of wine on a table or on a shelf, and I thought, uh-huh, but it's official policy, we don't drink. And so we had to talk about that. What does the Bible say about drunkenness? And where is there a place of freedom where you know what? You let it go for the sake of the gospel. Have your opinion, but let everybody else go. So we had to help the people grow in terms of biblical diversity. Now, a third element here that I have, and this is number two, of course, on your outline, protecting unity in a church family, addressing differences, resolving offenses, not letting the church be hijacked by an influential family, single ministry, or a special interest group. And of course, James 2 is that description of giving honor, too much honor, to a person with money and despising someone who doesn't have money. You're familiar with that as an example. I'm saying protecting unity. Sometimes in smaller churches, and we should all be aware of this, sometimes in the smaller the church, the more power a person can have to lead the church in the wrong direction. The gentleman who met me in the parking lot, if I had been so afraid that he might leave the church that I gave in to his demands, our little church would never have moved forward. We'd have been stuck in the parking lot. There's another church we're familiar with in our town where there's a big issue being discussed actually today. It affects us profoundly because our little church needs a bigger building. We need a bigger building. So there's another church today discussing some things that relate to us, but there's one person in that group who said, my way, who is, and the others today are having a discussion about how it should be. See? Well, sometimes the smaller the church, the more power a person has. And I needed to come to the place in that setting to say, you know, if he leaves, I'm going to wish him well and bless him as he goes. But we cannot let that person's opinion stifle our church. Protecting unity can mean a whole number of things. Differences of opinion, absolutely. Resolving offenses, we've had to do that through the years. Sometimes this is so hard. All of these are hard. Every now and then, I'll say something a little too strongly and someone will get offended. When we came to that little church, we had this is back in the day when we had an organ that was a real important instrument in the church. It sounded awful. From an instrument standpoint, it really was terrible. But it's what we were used to. I wasn't used to it, but other people seemed to be used to it. And finally, it started making enough noise, the wrong noises, that we didn't have anybody play it for a while. And then we decided to buy one of those newfangled keyboards. It was pretty cool. But I failed to ask the right people all the questions I thought I had. But I had left out one person whose opinion I didn't ask. She came to my office to say, how come you asked that person and that person, but you didn't ask me my opinion? Okay, wisdom at this point. Well, you're tempted to say, because I asked those people and they know more than you. Instead, what did I say? I am so sorry. It was far better to eat it than to defend it. And I said, I'm so sorry. We should have asked your opinion. We should have taken you with us to the store. We took so-and-so and so-and-so to shop for keyboards. We should have listened to you too. And I'm so sorry. Will you forgive me? Okay, that seemed like, a better biblical way to resolve an offense. It let us move forward as friends rather than me saying, well, you know, what's the death words to a church? Because I'm the pastor. How about that? Yeah. Yes, you are. You may not be here for long, but you're the pastor. Yes, you have power, don't you? Wrong power at that time. No. Once you say, because I'm the leader, it's often been said, you're not the leader. So much prefer different kind of influence. Don't let the group be hijacked. Yes, absolutely. Oh, these are important things. One more element. Emphasize here. I'm saying emphasize and practice both grace and truth. This is one of our core values as a church. This is something we're working to hand off to the other churches that we are assisting right now. When people ask about our DNA, I will say to them, one key part of it is the emphasis and the practice of both grace and truth. And what I mean by that is this. For one, we're following the example of Jesus. As the Gospel of John defines Jesus' ministry twice in chapter 1, I think it's verse 14 certainly, and I think it's verse 17. Jesus was full of grace and truth. Grace and truth. That means he loved people. He loved lost people. He welcomed sinners into his life. He had dinner with tax collectors and sinners, didn't he? That's that grace part. He also spoke truth to them. He said things like, go and sin no more. He said those kinds of things. So he used truth and he exercised grace. Sometimes churches err on one side or the other. That is, I'd say sometimes churches are more about grace to the exclusion of truth. Everybody gets a hug and you don't ever address touchy subjects. So just everybody gets a hug. Nothing wrong with that as long as truth is brought in. Some churches are more about truth, meaning, you know what? We're going to smack everybody. And that was my friend in the parking lot. You're going to let somebody in sin walk into our church? Answer, yes, because we let you in and I came in. So until we both get it all figured out, I've got blind sides too. I'm not that perfect. If you think the pastor's here because I'm perfect, oh, buddy, have you got another story? And sir, you don't have it all together either, because remember, if you don't love lost people, you're not much like Jesus. So yes, people who are sinners can walk into our church. But truth and grace must be wed and exercised in the life of a church. In our preaching, our teaching, our counsel, addressing truth, and yes, much grace. So I really believe these are some of the elements that pave the way for relationships both in the church and outside. Grace and truth need to operate inside the walls of the church, and they need to operate outside. What I want to do is move, I'm going to say fairly quickly through the next section, because then I want to put pictures up to give you some examples of how, in our context, we do some of these things. Okay? Not because I want you to do the same activities, but because I want you to think about how this would work in your context. Okay? We're thinking, of course, about improving relationships within the church and without. That's kind of our target here today with unbelievers. So I'm wanting to think with you about these five topics. They're on your handout. I'm just going to move quickly through them and tell you what I mean by them. Okay? So stay close to Jesus' example. For me, that means that every 3 or 4 years, I preach through one of the Gospels. My style of preaching means that routinely, I'm preaching through Bible books. Oh, there are exceptions to that, but that's the bread and butter. That's normally what I do, okay? This fall, it's time again. We're going to be preaching through the Gospel of Mark. Part of that, of course, in returning to the Gospels again and again, is to hear the Gospel and see the life of Christ. But in seeing the life of Christ, I routinely point out how Jesus treated people, how he treated disciples when he said, come follow me, and how he treated the tax collectors and sinners. So that's a routine part of my preaching. So I want them to see that when I call them to love lost people, I'm not making that up because I'm just dying to see more people in a building. Though I, without apology, I want more people in the building. I do. I always want somebody else to come to Christ. And even now and then, you have people, I know there's people that press too much about numbers, but there are also people who press back too much about numbers and say it's not about growth. I know it's not about growth. I know it's not about numbers, but I want one more person to come to Christ. And if you don't, you're not a real biblical Christian. I want more people. Yes, I do. I do. I want more. So my opinion, Jay Mosser here, don't apologize for wanting more people coming to Christ, joining the family of God, and being discipled. Don't apologize. Amen. Go get some. Follow Jesus' example. Make sure they see this is what Jesus did. It's why he came. Leaders, I'm saying, set an example for goodness sakes. If you want your people to love lost people, I'm just asking, do you? Are you okay talking to somebody whose lifestyle is radically different from biblical Christianity? Do you know how to have those conversations? Do the people you serve know that? Do they ever see you interacting with others, however they would see you? I remember we were getting ready for an event that I'll show you here in a moment, and along came a lady who I knew because I'd met her in another context. I'm part of Rotary. That's one of my connections in the community. Join a club that non-believers are in. I joined our Rotary Club, and suddenly I'm just routinely in meetings with people who don't know Jesus who all live around us. Wonderful. Well, here came this lady. Well, she is in a lifestyle that does not accord with biblical Christianity. Okay? Her car, she's a politician, was directly in front of our people in a community parade. And the irony was not lost on her. Like, here I am, and here's this Bible church. So she came down. I said, "Hi, how are you?" She said, "Wow, this is ironic, isn't it?" And I knew what she meant. A collision of worldviews just, 15 feet apart. And I said, "Yeah, kind of is interesting, isn't it?" And she said, "Wow, so your church is here." And I said, "Absolutely." And I said, can I tell you why? Here's one reason. We want to be the kind of church that if we left our community, if we moved to another community, even people who don't agree with us would miss us. That was my explanation. We want to be the kind of church that if we moved, people who don't love Jesus would miss our presence. She went, "Huh, well, that's a different way to think." I said, "Yeah, it is." And off we, I'd love to say, and she came to Christ. Not yet. Leaders set an example, but people heard the conversation and saw me be kind to her. I didn't do it for that reason, but it was public. It was a public setting. There was another setting when I introduced her and her partner. Now, you can refuse to do it, or you can be kind and introduce her the way she'd like to be introduced. And I did. This is Representative so-and-so, and she's joined today by her partner, so-and-so. It was a public setting. I spoke with kindness. So anyway, leader, set an example. Number three, watch your language. Yeah, no, I mean this. How do you talk about unbelievers in your church, in the building? Do you talk respectfully about people who don't yet know Jesus? Or do you spend your time using words like pagans, or those people, or those rotten sinners, or people who struggle with that, like they're modern day lepers? They may be in the room. So are you aware of what you're saying up front? You need to work at this. There are no churches who should just ignore this topic. What languages do you speak up front? Does it say to people, "You're welcome here"? This is a very sensitive topic to me because my dad was not a follower of Jesus. My mom came to Christ after she married my dad. So my mom took us to church. I grew up going to church with my mom, and my dad wasn't about to go. This is a point of contention between them. One conversation I had with my dad, he didn't like to talk about spiritual things, but as an adult, we talked briefly a couple of times about this, and his comment to me, I've never forgotten it. He said, "I really don't like church much," because to tell you, he didn't finish high school. He had a rough growing up years, okay? Not that educated. But he said to me, "Every time I go to church, I feel stupid. There's all these big words, and you're supposed to know stuff, and I don't know any of it. And who likes to go places where they feel stupid?" Note to self. I want to be the kind of pastor that whoever you are when you come, I won't make you feel stupid. See? So I'm asking us in our churches, you're going to revitalize them? You're going to say to people who may come in the doors, "You're welcome here"? Watch your language. Watch your language. I gave you a few things here to think about. Number four, have fun with God's people. This is thinking about improving relationships within the church. Absolutely have fun with God's people. Now, that can be having fun on mission as you're doing redemptive type events, but I also think you can have fun like having pizza together. Or as you now know what an American potluck is. I don't always say they're fun, but you too could have a potluck, agape dinner, a couple other terms for that. But I'm just saying, whatever that looks like in your context, you could have fun with God's people just because they're fun to be around. Hopefully there's some in your congregation, however big your church, hopefully somebody fun to be around. So have fun with them. Whatever that looks like in your context. European style is going to look different than American style. No problem. What would fun be here? I'll show you some examples. And then I'm suggesting here, number five, find places to serve and interact with your neighbors and community with nothing expected in return in the spirit of Jeremiah 29, which is a wonderful text. I've taught this to our congregation. I refer to it often. It's God's people exiled in Babylon and God telling them, stick around for a while. Be a blessing to the city. Not just so that they'll come to your church, but as a gesture of common grace. How can you be kind to your community? How can you serve them? Now, I'm going to fly through some pictures. Again, I'm wanting to make sure there's time for us to talk about how we could do this in our own settings. That's the next big discussion point. How could I do some of these things? I want to show you some pictures from our church life. This is our church canopy, Sunset Bible Church, in a community festival. We do this routinely. There are several things throughout the community in the year, and we spent, oh boy, it was like probably a couple thousand euros to make it equivalent. It wasn't cheap. But here's our niche. We years ago, we started this, and it still works, so we keep doing it. We are the free water church. We give away bottles of water. Every community festival wants somebody to come and give away bottles of water. Not with a sermon. Like, hello, before you take this bottle of water, I am from Sunset Bible Church and you have to come and here's a tract. I don't do that. We tried handing a little piece of paper once. We found them all over the floor, all over the ground. So we said, we're just not going to do that anymore. So we have a table with some church bulletins and things. If anybody wants it and says, who are you? They can come. But they can read that. Sunset Bible Church, all I need you to do is smile and say, you need a bottle of water? Great. Have a good day. How you doing? Somebody will stop and talk. We've had people come, stop and talk, come to church, and come to Christ. Not a lot, but some. But the biggest goal is to be good for the community. So in a neighboring community, we go there too. Neighborhood right next door, city right next door. There's an event there. We're the free water church. It's just a way to say, I'm going to have six or eight people from our church wearing a t-shirt that says Sunset Bible Church on it. So there's no mistaking us. And they're going to hand out bottles of water. I just say, be nice to people and give them a gift. Be open to whatever God does. So that's an example of us saying, how can we be good for the community? There's one. Here's another. I mentioned the community parade. So we discovered in our community, I don't know how it works in yours, but the first Saturday in June, there's a parade. Anybody can join. Anybody. You want to get a group together? Your family can be in the parade. If you want, you know, dress up in some funny costume or whatever, get in, wash up your car, polish it. You could walk in the parade, walk up the parade route and wave at people. You could. The high school band is usually there, little kids doing dances and things like that. And we said, thousands of people will be there. We should be there. And so this is a rented bus, and we do a day camp. We use this as an opportunity to provide a day camp for the community. Hundreds of kids come. We rent an elementary school, a primary school, because so many kids come. And we go all day. We do field trips. And you'll notice up here, we have a band. That's our band. Question for you. What should they play in the parade? Sorry? We decided some years ago to play songs that the community would recognize. So they usually play oldies, bluegrass. More about that in a minute. The community noticed, hey, those people actually are good. They play music we recognize. Maybe they like us. That was the intended message. It came across. So every year, this is several years ago, but it was the best picture I had. We found a community festival and said, how can we join in a way that will fit your language? okay? And a quick sidebar on this. Years ago, we did a block party for our church. I invited the fire department to come and spray water and things like that. And they quizzed me on this. They said, well, okay, a church event. Will someone be preaching? I said, no, we don't plan to do any preaching. She said, are you going to be giving Bibles to everybody? I said, no, we don't plan to have their Bibles over there, but we're not giving them to everybody. She said, the reason I'm asking is because we're not allowed to go to religious events. So if you're telling me it's really a community event, then we can come. But she didn't believe that we would do a community event just for fun. And we did it. There was no preaching, even though there were those going, but you missed an opportunity. Everybody should have left the tract. I said, they did. It just wasn't printed. It was the common language of kindness. See, where you greeted them warmly and said, oh, where do you live? Yeah, I'm part of the church. Where do you live? Over there? Wonderful. You know, I drive by your house all the time. You have this big dog. Wow, is it nice? Okay, what are you doing? What's the common language, the common currency here? Relationships. 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 You need to find things in your area where you can speak the language of the people, language of kindness and relationships, without expecting anything in return. Okay, from that parade when our band played music that was what people like to hear, so we got a call from the mayor. No, really, we did. The mayor called and said, hey, we do this other thing every year. This is, if you could see it, this is an apple orchard. And every fall, they do an apple cider squeeze where community people come, pick your apples, and right over here, they have a whole bunch of apple cider squeeze things set up. We need a band who will play. And you guys are pretty good. And you know how to play music that people like. Could you guys come and play? We've had that gig now for 10 years. Our band shows up the last Saturday of August every year and plays music, four 40-minute sets. All afternoon as hundreds of people come. And they introduce themselves, and yeah, it's Sunset Bible Church, and they advertise that, and they're playing oldies, they're playing bluegrass. They'll usually work in like I'll Fly Away, or they'll work in maybe Amazing Grace, because that's common language in America. But it's not church music, because it isn't the language of the people. So play music in the language of the people. I realize there's differences of opinion on this. But if you were going to go to a place where everybody spoke Swahili, what language will you use to sing? Well, Swahili, unless you're sinning or something. You're going to use the language of the people. We use the language of the people. And every year we get the call saying, would you come back? Would you come back? Would you come back? It's good for our people too. Dozens of our church people show up at this event and serve, run a cider press, walk around and talk to people. It's fantastic. Our church has has an ESL program. English is a second language. We serve people in our community, immigrants, who don't speak English well and want to. So this is in our church. This is from a couple years ago. There's English, just basic English. There's an optional, if you want to sign up for an English language Bible study, you can do that. Every year there are people who sign up for English language Bible studies, but that's not required to come to ESL. For a while, we had a class meeting in the library. For a while, we had a class meeting. Okay, maybe you wouldn't do this, but we do. For a while, we had a class meeting in the mosque. We were invited. A couple of our ladies were invited to come in and give English lessons in the mosque. Should God's people go? You can debate that yourself. We said, yes, they should. They should walk right in there and reclaim that territory for Jesus and teach English. And so we did. Wow. Huh. We do stuff for fun, too. This is a picnic. Every summer, we do picnics in a local park. Anybody can come, and usually people do. This is right on Puget Sound. That's salt water down there, and we do a baptism there. That's our main baptism site. A couple hundred people come. We baptize people down. It's very cold, by the way. I can personally tell you it's cold. But routinely, we set up a sound system. And as part of baptism events, it's a public event. There are other people in the park. I always want to explain the gospel very simply. What is this about? So here's what we're doing, and here's why. Okay? Explain it, for goodness sakes. Home fellowships, we like each other. We get, we as a whole philosophy of stuff we do, we meet in homes. That's a men's group, absolutely. Yeah, food. Some of our ladies got together for tea. It was mainly fun. Well, you know, you say encouraging things. I'm a fan of doing things together that are fun.